Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half hour, we're going to once again update the Balkans War. Last week, which was November 14th, we did a half hour updating some of the developments that have come to light since I last updated the story of the Balkans War, or Balkans Wars, and more has come to light or come into my hands since, so we're going to get right to it. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from The Guardian, that's a British paper, and specifically comes from The Guardian's website. The Guardian's website can be accessed at www.newsunlimited.co.uk. That's www.newsunlimited.co.uk. And News Unlimited is one word, all lowercase. This is from Friday, November 19th of 1999, and it's entitled Vatican Secretly Armed Croatia. It's by Chris McGreal, that's capital M-C, capital G-R-E-A-L in Johannesburg, South Africa, and Philip Willen in Rome, W-I-L-L-A-N. I may be mispronouncing the names. Once again, the title from The Guardian of 11-1999, Vatican Secretly Armed Croatia. It reads in part, "The Vatican secretly sent the Croatian government $40 million, or £25 million worth of bearer bonds, to buy weapons during the Bosnian War, a Johannesburg court was told yesterday during the trial of South Africa's former chemical warfare chief. Skipping down, the Vatican last night declined to respond to the allegations. The revelations came in testimony from the South African military's former Surgeon General, General Neil Nobel, K-N-O-B-E-L, and previously undisclosed defense ministry documents." So that again, those allegations coming from a trial in South Africa of the former apartheid regime's chemical warfare chief. His name, by the way, was Wouter Basson, or Basson, B-A-S-S-O-N. Again, I may be wrong on the pronunciation. Now, the historical relationship between the Vatican and fascist Croatia. Notice I say the Vatican, not the Catholic Church. That's a distinction one should effectively make. It's like equating the United States with the White House. The United States is much greater than the White House, and so do not equate the Vatican with the Catholic Church. But the Vatican and Croatian fascism have a long association. Goes back to the World War II period when the Vatican enthusiastically backed Roman Catholic Croatia, which became a vicious satellite state of Nazi Germany. The Vatican support for the fascist interests in Croatia has extended into the modern period as well, when the Vatican, along with Germany, became the first to recognize the, quote, independent, unquote, Croatian state in 1991. As discussed in For the Record segments 154, which go into that, as well as, For the Record segments 154 and For the Record segment 50 also discuss the breakup of Yugoslavia. I would also note that Croatian independence was secured to a certain extent with a $2 billion interest-free loan secured for Croatia by the American branch of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. The SMOM, or Knights of Malta, as they're popularly known, could be thought of as the military wing of the church. It's discussed in a miscellaneous archive show that's available from Spitfire, as well as in Radio Free America program number 21. There's a good discussion of the SMOM. And so Vatican support for Croatian fascism, both in the World War II period and the contemporary period, is a matter that is relatively well documented, and some of the references that I've cited will document it. So this allegation that the Vatican helped to secretly arm Croatia is something that I think should be seriously considered. The fascist nature of contemporary Croatia was discussed in the previous half-hour segment, in a characteristically excellent article by Diana Johnstone that was distributed through the ZNet commentary, that's the internet component of Z Magazine. That is to say, the United States had much to do with supporting Croatian independence. The main midwife of the breakup of Yugoslavia was Germany, as she was in the World War II period, but the United States has helped to a great extent. This would appear over the long haul to be a very foolish thing for the United States to do, because now it appears that Croatia is turning on the United States. The following is from the New York Times of Friday, November 19th of 1999. This is an article by Philip Sheenan, S-H-E-N-O-N. It's datelined Washington, November 18th, and headlined, U.S. Suspects Government of Croatia Break-ins, and it reads in part as follows. The government of Croatia, an occasional American ally in peace efforts in the Balkans, is behind a campaign of harassment against American diplomats and others promoting democracy in Croatia, according to senior administration officials. Among the actions were break-ins last month at the homes of a diplomat and an American government contractor, they added. The officials say American intelligence agencies have evidence tying the government of President Franjo Tudjman to the break-ins, which appear to be an effort to intimidate American diplomats into cutting off their contacts with opposition political parties in the final weeks before a parliamentary election. A senior Clinton administration official has said a listening device was found in the home of the government contractor, an American representative of the National Democratic Institute, which works closely with the United States Embassy in democracy-building, unquote, projects after the break-in at her home. No one was hurt in the break-ins, although American officials say they now fear that government-controlled newspapers and magazines are trying to incite violence against Americans in Croatia by portraying them as spies determined to overthrow the government. It is my opinion that American support for Croatian fascism is ultimately going to have the same result that American support for German fascism had in World War II. We will wind up wrestling in a very mortal fashion with our Frankenstein's monster. I mention that because not only is the fascist nature of contemporary Croatia, not Croatians, but Croatia, an important distinction documented in the first half hour of For the Record 184, which you're listening to now, but we would appear to be making some of the same mistakes in Kosovo that we had made historically throughout this century, supporting fascist elements and criminal elements, which ultimately will wind up hurting us. In For the Record segment 158 and in number 161, I discussed, actually For the Record segments 153, 158, and 161, I discussed the criminal and fascist antecedents of the Kosovo Liberation Army, including some of the antecedents going back to Balkan Muslim Waffen SS divisions from World War II. That in particular in For the Record segment 161. Once again, we are showing support for the KLA, not only through the military support in the recent Balkans, or the most recent episode of the Balkans War, but also politically as well. We have helped to support the KLA, which would appear to be adhering to its criminal and fascist antecedents. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, September 3rd of 1999. This is a New York Times story by Carlotta Gall, spelled G-A-L-L. It's dateline Pristina, Yugoslavia, and headlined, Civilian Force for Kosovo Approved, subheaded UN and NATO Agree to New Emergency Army Made Up of Ex-KLA Soldiers, and it reads in part as follows. After weeks of complex negotiations, NATO and UN officials have agreed to the formation of a civilian emergency force from the remnants of the Kosovo Liberation Army. The army, once a guerrilla force against the Serbs, is being dismantled this month under UN supervision, but though its successor, tentatively called the Kosovo Corps, will retain much of its military command structure, the duties of the new force remain a sensitive issue. Although NATO sees the Kosovo Corps as a civilian force, the rebel army's officers see it as a potential core of a future national army and are selling it to their followers as such. Quote, We will build a new army in the future, and the Kosovo Corps will be one part of it, unquote, said General Ajim Ceku, C-E-K-U, the chief of staff and a professional soldier for 20 years who was negotiating the plan. Now, in our previous half-hour segment, we took a look at General Ceku, who actually was an officer in the Croatian army that helped to birth the new, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia. He also had been a participant in Operation Storm, the cleansing, the Croatian offensive which cleansed the Krajina Serbs in the summer and fall of 1995, and did so with the aid of American elements through various mercenary companies. And General Ceku and connections to the main company involved with that is discussed in the previous half-hour segment. And by the way, we discussed Operation Storm and the U.S. and German aid to Operation Storm in For the Record segment 48, and these are all available from Spitfire. Bear in mind that as we looked at in For the Record segments 151 and 153, the Kosovo Liberation Army is deeply involved with drug trafficking, was viewed by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization right up to the very eve of the beginning of the offensive, the air offensive in Kosovo, and its antecedents go back to ethnic Albanians who had fought with the Axis in World War II when Kosovo was temporarily joined under Axis domination to Albania. In particular, one of the antecedents is the 21st Waffen SS Division, or Skanderberg Division, some of whose the sons and grandsons of which constitute a portion of the Kosovo Liberation Army. seeing such an organization turned into the de facto police and perhaps ultimately military force of Kosovo would appear to be a very poor idea, because there's every indication that the criminal and fascist antecedents of the Kosovo Liberation Army are being manifested in the, quote, new, unquote, Kosovo. And it would appear that among the victims, the many victims of the Kosovo Liberation Army, are some of the ethnic Albanian Kosovars themselves, as well as some of the remaining Serbs. Turning to the San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, October 17th of 1999, we find the following story. This is by Lori Montgomery of the Mercury News Berlin Bureau. It's dateline Malisevo, Yugoslavia, and it's headlined KLA Declining, subtitled Many Kosovars Tiring of the Rebel Group's Leadership. And it reads in part as follows. 4 months after the Kosovo Liberation Army swept triumphantly from the battlefield and seized control of the provincial government, many Kosovars have grown weary of the swaggering rebels, and support for their young commander, Hashim Thaçi, has virtually collapsed. By the way, Thaçi, by the way, is spelled capital T-H-A-C-I, as is the case with many of these pronunciations, I may be mispronouncing him. Continuing. Since Yugoslav government troops were driven out of Kosovo in mid-June after 3 months of NATO airstrikes, KLA fighters have occupied police stations and municipal buildings, declared themselves local monarchs, threatened and harassed political rivals, and attempted to inject their brand of authoritarian control deeply into people's lives. As a result, most Kosovars say they would not choose Thaçi to lead their fledgling government in elections expected to be held next year. A recent survey of 2,500 people in towns and villages throughout the southern Yugoslav province found that 92% would vote for Ibrahim Rugova, the pacifist intellectual who had served as Kosovo's shadow president for the past decade. Thaçi would win only 8% if an election were held today, according to the unscientific survey by a Kosovo media organization. That organization chose not to publish its findings, deeming them politically explosive at a time when criticism of the KLA, now officially disarmed and disbanded, often is met with threats of, quote, punishment, unquote. A separate survey by a Western polling organization found that Rugova would beat Thaçi by a ratio of 4-1. Now note that even though the KLA is officially disarmed, they have been basically recreated or reincarnated, albeit in a somewhat smaller force, as the Kosovo Corps, a nominally civilian force, but drawn from the Kosovo Liberation Army, with its overt fascist and criminal and drug trafficking antecedents. So it should not come as a great surprise to see this kind of behavior on the part of the KLA, and to also see the ethnic Albanians responding as one might expect. Do note, however, that even though the KLA is officially disarmed, they have been reincarnated as the Kosovo Corps, still in a position to be very intimidating or perhaps lethal to those ethnic Albanians who do not go along with their program, and it would appear that many are not. In addition to political terrorism, it would also appear that many of the KLA troops are effecting sort of an economic and material hegemony over Kosovo, and this again at the expense of not just Serbs, but also many of the ethnic Albanians on whose behalf they were nominally at least fighting. The following comes from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, November 24th of 1999. This is a story, a Washington Post story by R. Jeffrey Smith. It's datelined Ferizaj, Yugoslavia, and headlined Ex-KLA Troops Having Their Way, subtitled Ethnic Albanians Feeling Sting of Evictions and Taxes, and it reads in part as follows. Nasir Hajari was summoned to the door of his third-floor apartment here late last month. Outside were three men who identified themselves as employees of the provisional Kosovo government run by Hashim Thaçi, political leader of the now disbanded Kosovo Liberation Army. The three had a message. Hajdari and his wife and three children were no longer entitled to live in that flat. They had to vacate the premises to make room for new occupants selected by Thaçi's rebel-led government. The message has been heard with growing frequency by Kosovo's ethnic Albanians, as well as Serbs in recent days. Despite the UN administration here, Thaçi's government of former soldiers has declared itself the sole arbiter of which citizens have a right to preferred accommodations in the freezing temperatures that have descended on Kosovo. So in addition to politically, it would appear that materially, the ethnic Albanians as well as the Serbs are suffering at the hands of the KLA, which certainly, to a certain extent at least, appears to be manifesting its criminal and fascist antecedents, as I've said. One wonders whether perhaps ultimately our support for the KLA will turn out to be as politically counterproductive as our support for the fascist elements currently in power in Croatia has turned out to be. Bear in mind, we handled much of the military support for Croatia, although Germany also contributed massively in that regard. It was Germany that really midwifed not only the rebirth of a fascist Croatia, but Germany effected the breakup of Yugoslavia and figures to be the main beneficiary of that breakup over the long haul. In Martin Lee's landmark book, The Beast Reawakens, now happily out in paperback as I speak on November 21st of 1999, the role of the Federal Republic of Germany in breaking up both Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia is very adequately documented, in addition to some of the tape references that I've already made. A German computer corporation, Scopeland Software, has now donated computers to the Kosovo Liberation Army, perhaps to keep track of their drug profits, who knows. This was an American branch of this company, but it was a German company that did that, and that's in keeping with who I believe is going to turn out to be the real beneficiary of the breakup of the Balkans, and that is Germany. To make a very long story very short, in the most recent Balkans War, or the most recent flare-up of hostilities in the Balkans War, the U.S. dropped a portion of its social security surplus on Serbia in order to secure the Balkans for Hitler. The Germans were welcomed by older, the German, quote, peacekeeping forces, unquote, were welcomed by older Kosovars who remembered them as liberating heroes from the World War II period, a rather unique set of memories of the World War II Germans as liberators. However, Germany's geopolitical role in the Balkans appears to have extraordinary continuity from the Hitler period through the contemporary period, and in that context, one wants to examine the following. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle business section of Thursday, August 5th of 1999. This is an article by David Lazarus of the Chronicle. It's headlined, SF Firm Donates Computers to KLA, subtitled, Humanitarian Act Worries UN Official. It reads in part as follows. A representative of the San Francisco office of Germany's Scopeland Software yesterday handed over a first shipment of computers to the Albanian rebels in Kosovo, a move intended as a humanitarian gesture, but one that could strengthen the hand of the rebel group. The Provisional Government of Kosovo, comprised largely of members of the Kosovo Liberation Army, is not recognized by the United Nations or the United States and has been implicated in recent retaliatory attacks on Serbs. The Provisional Government, based in Pristina, the province's capital, could use its newly obtained Pentium 3 server, workstations, and network connections to develop an edge over moderate political elements in Kosovo. Right now, everything is fluid. It's very delicate, unquote, said Andres Ramirez, senior liaison officer for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in New York. Again quoting, in a situation where you have potential civil war, if you give equipment to one group, it throws fuel on the fire, unquote. A U.S. State Department official confirmed that Washington has no official dealings with the Kosovo Provisional Government and declined to comment on the ramifications of the Infotech donation. As Scopeland Software sees it, the Provisional Government, led by former KLA Commander Hashim Tachi, is in the best position to swiftly implement measures to improve the lot of returning refugees. This was from the Chronicle of Thursday, August 5th of 1999. Bear in mind this, the previous story that we looked at from the Chronicle of 11/24/99, a Washington Post story, in which the returning refugees are less than enthralled with the treatment that they have been getting at the hands of the KLA, and in fact, they've been getting treatment only somewhat better than the treatment that the Serbs have received. So this particular assessment by the German software company Scopeland Software would appear to be rather premature. And I'm being as gentle there as possible. Please note that it was a German company that gave the KLA their computers. I would note also that the official currency in Kosovo, still nominally at least, part of Yugoslavia, is now the Deutschmark. Turning now to the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, September 4th of 1999, in the World Reports section of the Chronicle, we find the following on page A13. This is datelined Pristina, Yugoslavia. It's headlined, German Mark Made Kosovo's Official Currency. This article reads, in a major step toward severing Kosovo's remaining ties with Yugoslavia, the United Nations announced yesterday that the German mark will replace the Yugoslav dinar as Kosovo's official currency. Bernard Kouchner, K-O-U-C-H-N-E-R, head of the UN mission, signed a new regulation allowing the use of the mark, the U.S. dollar, the Swiss franc, and other convertible currencies. Although other Western currencies can be used, the mark will become the undisputed king. A UN official said the Yugoslav government, which officially retains sovereignty over Kosovo despite the presence of 40,000 NATO-led peacekeepers, was not consulted before the decision was made. Note now that the Deutsche Mark is the official currency of Kosovo. To veteran listeners to this program, that should come as no surprise whatsoever. That is not the only part of Yugoslavia, or what used to be Yugoslavia, in which the Deutsche Mark is now the official currency. Reading now from the Financial Times of London of Tuesday, November 23rd of 1999, this is a story by Irina Guzelova, G-U-Z-E-L-O-V-A. It's headlined, D-Mark's Embrace Drives Old Partners Towards Breakup. It's subtitled, the adoption of a parallel currency by Montenegro has put relations with Serbia under severe strain. And that would be something of an understatement. Montenegro, which is now under a great deal of pressure domestically and internationally to break up with Serbia, thus fracturing the last two remaining members of the Yugoslavian Union, Montenegro has adopted, you guessed it, the D-mark as its official currency. And like Kosovo, it's still nominally, at least, part of Yugoslavia. I don't think there could be any superficial indication more dramatic and more unequivocal of the German imperialistic role that is being played in the Balkans than the last article and this one. The official currency of Kosovo, the Deutsche Mark. The official currency of Montenegro, the Deutsche Mark. All of which goes to show what Mark Twain once said, or not Mark Twain, but rather William Faulkner once said, the past is never dead and buried, it isn't even past, particularly not in the Balkans, particularly not as the century comes to an end, looking rather like the way much of the middle of the century looked. About the official adoption of the Deutsche Mark as the currency of Montenegro, we read, again, from the Financial Times of London, 11-23-99, Petar Bonicevic was one of the lucky ones. When he learned that he would not be able to collect his monthly pension in Montenegro, as he had always done, his son, who lives in the Yugoslav capital, Belgrade, collected it for him. Mr. Bonicevic is one of about 4,000 pensioners living in Montenegro. The last republic remaining was Serbia in the Yugoslav Federation, who received their pensions from the federal budget. Furious at the Montenegrin government's adoption of the D-mark as its official currency this month, Belgrade blocked the pension payments. Many pensioners have no relatives in Belgrade and have had to contemplate a trip to Serbia, which could cost them more than half their monthly pension. Thousands of army employees and civil servants may face the same predicament. Days after Montenegro's adoption of the Deutsche Mark, the Yugoslav National Bank blocked all financial transactions between the two republics, putting further pressure on strained relations. That again from the Financial Times of London, 11-23-99 on page 4 of the American edition. The official currency of Montenegro now, the Deutsche Mark. And speaking of German influence in the Balkans, research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got this from the Daily Mail of Saturday, October 2nd of 1999. This is an article by Christopher Evans entitled Genocide and the Terrible Nazi Secret of the German Who Leads British Troops. It's about the background of General Klaus Reinhard, who has taken over as the NATO military commander in Kosovo. It reads in part, committed wholeheartedly to Hitler's fanatical ideals, Fritz Reinhard rose rapidly through the ranks of the Nazi Party. He governed the purse strings in the Ministry of Finance and was promoted to Obergruppenführer or General in the brown shirts. And in 1941 he had a son, who this week took over command of 8,000 British troops. General Klaus Reinhardt is directing NATO peacekeeping operations in war-torn Kosovo after being handed the reins by Britain's Lieutenant General Sir Mike Jackson. Klaus Reinhardt is keen to distance himself from his country's past and says of his father merely that, quote, he was an undersecretary in the finance ministry between 1933 and 1945. In fact, a Daily Mail investigation has discovered that Fritz Reinhardt was a Nazi war criminal who was involved in an operation to exterminate more than 1.75 million Jews. He was jailed for 4 years after the war and classified a, quote, major offender, unquote. He is said by eminent historians of the Nazi period to have lent his name to the infamous Aktion Reinhardt, the code name for the operation under which the SS massacred Jews in Poland and stole from them property worth 180 million marks, more than 360 million pounds at today's values. Skipping down. In 1933, after Hitler took power, he was made permanent secretary in the Reich Ministry of Finance and a Gruppenführer, or lieutenant general in the SA, being promoted to Obergruppenführer in 1937. This about Fritz Reinhardt. With his clipped mustache and greased hair, Obergruppenführer Reinhardt bore more than a passing resemblance to his master, Hitler. His influential post of Staatssekretär in the Finance Ministry of the Third Reich was a recognition of his considerable talent as an economist and a reward for years of loyal service to the Nazi Party. It was in the Finance Ministry that he performed the most startling service for the Fatherland. Please note that the Finance Ministry worked hand in glove with the Bormann Organization in its initial phases, that going from August of 1944 till the end of 1945. And please note that Fritz Reinhardt was the real power in the German Finance Ministry once Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schacht was replaced by Count Lutz Ferdinand von Krosigk. Continuing with this Daily Mail story, as the most senior civil servant in the ministry which bankrolled Hitler's war machine, Reinhardt was junior only to the minister himself, Count Sverin von Krosigk. The Count, a crony of Hitler, was really only a figurehead, and according to historians, the decisions were made by Reinhardt. Please note that Fritz Reinhardt held this position up until the end of the Third Reich in 1945, and thereby inevitably he has to have worked hand in glove with the Bormann Organization as it was secreting capital out to the 750 corporate fronts in neutral countries. Now, I've noted in the past that the failure of denazification of Germany was never more evident is not evident any place more than in the army. The Inspector General of the German Armed Forces, Klaus Naumann, in the early 90s said that the job of the German Armed Forces was to roll back the values of liberty, equality, and fraternity, the values of the French Revolution. And I've also noted that Manfred Raeder, a convicted Nazi terrorist who killed a couple of Vietnamese with a bomb, was hired to lecture to the German Officers' Academy in 1995, and the Bundeswehr, the German Army, actively supported his organization. I would also note of Klaus Reinhardt that he also was involved with financing the Bundeswehr. Skipping down in the story, in 1988, Reinhardt's son Klaus would become a general too and would also be engaged in administering the finances of the German military. A curriculum vitae issued this week by NATO describes his role as, quote, coordination of the budgetary means for the armed forces, unquote, of Germany. Now, in For the Record segment 155, we noted that the people who occupy the current positions of leadership in the Bormann Organization are the sons and daughters of top Nazi officials as well as key SS personnel, in light of the fact that Fritz Reinhardt undoubtedly has to have worked very closely with the Bormann Organization in its initial phases. One has to wonder whether Klaus Reinhardt also might have been tabbed for service with the Bormann Organization, bearing in mind that all of the officials to serve with the Underground Reich, as I have termed it, were given official anti-Nazi pedigrees. We'll deal again with this subject in greater length in future broadcasts. That concludes this program. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.